This is Live Fire, with the latest news about threats to your liberties and your right to keep and bear arms. Our guests include elected and other public officials, journalists, citizen activists, and others who are fighting for the Bill of Rights, especially the Second Amendment. Live Fire covers a broad range of constitutional issues, particularly the debate over private ownership of firearms. Our host is Larry Pratt, Executive Director of Gun Owners of America. Remember, the issue is not just about gun control. It's about control. Now, here's your host, Larry Pratt.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Live Fire. Today we want to take another look at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, that group that should not exist constitutionally, that group, the gang, we might say, since they are not a legitimate organization, that go after individuals to justify their existence and try to drum up charges against people who haven't done anything wrong. And we unhappily have the opportunity to talk to just such an individual today. David Olison is a veteran of many years of service to the United States Army and the United States Army Reserves. And he has been convicted in a court of law thanks to the lying procedures of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, the gang, as they ought to be better known. And Dave's case illustrates just how these folks will go, how far they will go in order to try to justify their existence and shake the tambourine in order to get a few more pennies, a few more million dollars, I should say, sent their way by the taxpayer to their coffers so they can hire even more agents to go and harass more individuals in the United States of America. Dave Olison, I want to thank you for being with us, and I'm glad that we have a chance to tell your story. Hopefully this is a story that's going to be heard before you are taken away from your family, which is just an incredible notion that a bunch of thugs have the authority to do what they have done. Your grave offense was to own a perfectly legal AR-15 semi-automatic rifle, the so-called civilian equivalent of the M16 battle rifle that so many soldiers own, and no doubt you have had one while you were in active duty. So let's kind of back up and go from the beginning. What was it that got the interest of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the gang?
Well, apparently around about 2 months or so after I had the weapon on loan out to one of our neighbors, it malfunctioned while he was out at the shooting range. It fired off about 2 rounds and then jammed. He cleared it, tried to shoot again. It fired off 2 rounds and jammed, at which point, because the Conservation Club in Berlin here has a strict, you know, no automatic weapons policy, as soon as someone heard the first 2 shots in rapid succession, they called the police department who came to investigate it.
That's pretty amazing that people are so concerned about having an automatic firearm that they would actually call the police. They didn't even go up to the individual involved, the person that you'd loaned the gun to?
Well, while he was at the range, yes, they talked to him, and he had 2 friends with him. They talked to them, just took some quick notes. I believe they did quickly write down the serial numbers of the weapons.
Oh, my goodness.
Whereupon they went back and, at that point, didn't really have a whole lot more interest in it, but they figured since there seemed to be some issue or some possible issue, they called the ATF just to inquire. I believe, as I remember the police reports, The inquiry was, if this is an automatic weapon, what are the regulations when it comes to loaning it out? At that point, you know, ATF took their notes, ran my name, said, well, there's our database doesn't show any automatic weapons registered to, you know, David R. Olofsson. So, you know, you guys need to go take that weapon until we can look at it.
Of course, the
determination.
The absence of your name in the BATFE, the gang's registry, doesn't really prove anything, since we know that about half of the records that they have are inaccurate. So a data search for them is kind of the same as flipping a coin. So,
it's a 50-50 shot.
It's a 50-50 shot. Now, what really strikes me as, what disappoints me is that a fellow American would think that he has a duty to call an illegitimate agency of the federal government and inquire of them rather than, first of all, that he has any obligation to them at all, and secondly, that somebody who's, you know, that he would even have a problem with somebody who's been firing a gun semi-automatically and twice, as you say, it fires quote-unquote automatically and then jams. Anybody that knows anything about a firearm, and I don't hold myself out to be an expert, but I know enough to know that if it goes thunk, that's not really the kind of gun you want to rob a bank with. That's not really a handy weapon. There's something
wrong. Nor is it one that you want to, you know, mess with, and so you break it apart and see what's wrong. I mean, the AR-15, as you know, that's an aluminum-framed gun. If that round happens to detonate outside the chamber, you're going to have a very, very bad day.
Well, that's the other problem. This could be a real serious accident waiting to happen that could either harm or kill the person that is firing the gun. So the only thing wrong with this quote-unquote machine gun is that it's dangerous to the user, and actually the safest place might be in front of this gun. That somebody would think that they have to call a bunch of nincompoops in Washington is really disappointing, that we have folks at a firing range, at a gun range, that have this kind of point of view, that they have this little information about a gun. Well, we're going to continue this report from David Olofsson. We're going to see what else happened then after this gun malfunctioned at a range when he didn't even have it in his possession. Stay tuned. We're going to be back and talk some more with Dave Olofsson.
Stay tuned for more Live Fire, the program that bears the raw truth about the battle over who controls the guns, the people or the government.
President Woodrow Wilson said, "Liberty has never come from the government. The history of liberty is the history of the limitation of governmental power, not the increase of it." Woodrow Wilson has often been called a liberal, but Wilson's brand of liberalism had its focus on opportunities and personal development, not government control. The liberals today fail to see that the foundation of every nation and the structure of every culture is defined by its liberty. Hard-working Americans have been told to sit down and shut up by these so-called liberals. We have been told that we don't know how to care for ourselves, that we don't know what is best for our children. This isn't liberalism, this is socialism. So where's liberty and freedom and personal responsibility? The liberals have taken it away and replaced it with socialism. Like my daddy always told me, it's better to teach a man how to fish than to give him a fish. It's time the party of Howard Dean and Hillary Clinton come clean with their socialistic agenda.
A Conservative Moment with Nathan Tabor has been brought to you by aconservativemoment.com. To learn more, visit aconservativemoment.com or call 877-8-ACT-NOW.
Larry Pratt's latest book is now available. On the Firing Line, Essays in the Defense of Liberty can be purchased from Gun Owners of America for only $18 plus shipping and handling. On the Firing Line is a collection of essays that GOA's Executive Director Larry Pratt has written over the last few years. They were composed in the battle to defend the right to keep and bear arms, as well as the rest of our liberties protected in the Bill of Rights. Pratt has taken on the arguments used by the enemies of freedom who would disarm and subjugate Americans. Pratt shows that the debate transcends firearms because the debate is really about control. Who will control the lives of private citizens? Will it be each person individually, or will it be the government? You can order your copy of On the Firing Line by going to the GOA website at gunowners.org, or you can call GOA's toll-free number 1-888-886-GUNS. That's 888-886-GUNS.
Now, more news about the threats to your liberties and your right to keep and bear arms. This is Live Fire. And here once again is your host, Executive Director of Gun Owners of America, Larry Pratt.
My guest today is David Olufsen. He is a member of our armed services. At least he was until the United States government, another branch of same government, decided that he had exchanged, he had transferred a firearm that was an unregistered machine gun to another individual. And for that grave offense, something which actually is the 20th century equivalent, 21st century equivalent of the militia firearms owned by our forefathers, for that grave offense, for having transferred a militia firearm, he has now been convicted of this terrible thing, this grave offense against the Commonwealth of the United States and the peace of the United States, sentenced to 30 months in incarceration. David, I'm hardly can imagine what it must be like to be looking at this kind of an outcome when you haven't done anything wrong, when this gun, which, if it were as the government alleged, should have been something you should have been able to have without any problem in any case, it wasn't even what the government alleged, and that's what really drives me crazy. This gun had, after many years, and I presume it had been manufactured 20, 30 years ago, whatever it might have been, the parts were starting to go, and it had malfunctioned, and the federal government, the gang, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, apparently does not know the difference between a gun that has malfunctioned and a machine gun, and therefore they wet their pants and brought an indictment against you for having transferred this terribly dangerous gun that would go boom, thunk.
Well, I think it's important to remember that by the definition, as they brought it forth in this case and as the judge allowed to stand, this gun was exactly what they alleged. I mean, it was agreed by all parties that there was no modification to this weapon. The weapon was in stock configuration, and as such, since it would fire more than one round, and as the judge put it, since the statute does not have any requirements for any particular testing procedures or limitations on what kind of tests or modifications the BATFE can perform, it was a machine gun.
Now, that's an important...
Unfortunately, under that ruling, all weapons are machine guns. It's a matter of if the ATF can make it go bang. Not will it do it on its own, not has it been changed, just if we could modify the weapon into, you know, what they would consider readily restorable, then it is a machine gun. Well, this ruling, in essence, makes contraband out of every firearm in America.
Just about every firearm in America. It's an amazing notion. Now, one of the gentlemen that was involved in your case, Len Savage, was able to show in another case that a similar situation, a similar problem, involved a gun that was malfunctioning. In fact, it was about ready to blow up. And the BATFE agent, the agent from the gang, was so ignorant about firearms that he, on videotape, and this was the amazing thing about this particular other case, the Glover case, he didn't have any idea that the gun he had in his hands and he was firing, trying to show that it was a, quote, machine gun, was about ready to not only go bang, but boom, in his hands, blow up and injure or kill him. And so he proceeded to go along and continue firing the gun until he found the right combination of ammunition that would make it go brup, thunk. And that's kind of what happened in your case, except a jury never got to see this kind of terminal stupidity that was being pursued by the gang and one of their agents at a firing range. And so, as you say, they are at liberty to fire this gun through who knows how many different tests until they finally get it to malfunction and, you know, bang, 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 and then finally, ba-dup, thunk, oh, oh, we got a machine gun. Now, if somebody thinks that's a machine gun, if somebody thinks that's the way you want to go into battle with no control over how that gun is going to fire semi-automatically or fully automatically, then somebody believes in really incredible things. And yet that's what the government presented to the judge and to the jury. And so they found that under this incredible notion that has nothing to do with reality, you had somehow transferred a gun that was a machine gun, even though when you transferred the gun, that is, when you lent the gun to this chap, somehow the gun transformed itself. They never really quite explained, if I understand this case, when it was that you turned this perfectly ordinary semi-automatic AR-15, and I have I don't know how many in my own safe, you transfer that gun into, you change that gun into a machine gun. They never made that argument as to when and how that happened, did they?
No, there were, I'd say, loose allegations, but nobody even bothered to try and prove that the gun was modified or that, you know, it was shot that way before. And as the judge put it in the sentencing, when we tried to get the ATF to release what we considered exculpatory evidence proving that the gun has not been changed in any way, make, shape, or form, the judge repeatedly made it very clear that is not one of the requirements for transferring a machine gun. All they need to prove is that the gun changed hands and that eventually the ATF was able to make it fire more than one round.
That ought to draw the picture, folks. That ought to tell everybody that what Dave Olofsson has pointed out already is the case, that if you have a semi-automatic, you don't have a semi-automatic. In fact, you don't even need a semi-automatic. If you have a double-barreled shotgun, it would be possible to fire that double-barrel shotgun in such a way that both barrels fire at the same time. Whoa! One pull of the trigger, more than one round fires. You've got a machine gun. Now, I know you thought you knew something about firearms. You didn't think a double-barreled shotgun was a machine gun, but the gang does, and the judge in Milwaukee, Wisconsin does. They know something that you don't know about firearms, that double-barreled shotgun is a machine gun. This is incredible. This case has set up any American gun owner so that he can be found guilty of having an illegal firearm, an unregistered machine gun. What in the world is our country coming to, Dave Olofsson, if you can't even own a gun, which supposedly is legal to own, and all of a sudden, at some point beyond your control, as in the case of your semi-automatic AR-15 rifle, the gun malfunctions, actually. It changes itself into a machine gun. Well, then everybody in the country is waiting for the gang to come and arrest them and find them guilty, I suppose.
Yes, if I could. I mean, I got a quote from one of the sidebar excerpts from Mr. Honstad, who was the assistant U.S. attorney in this case. And during the sidebar, when he was talking to the judge, and this is straight out of the transcript, if you pull the trigger once and it fires more than one round, no matter what the cause, it's a machine gun. And I think that about sums up this case in its entirety. The judge clarified that further in sentencing and went one step further, saying it's not a matter even if the weapon malfunctions. But because there's no limitations on the ATF in the statute, if they can do anything, you know, and the anything could be anything from simply using the wrong ammunition in the weapon to making minor changes themselves to making major changes. There's no limitations that in the statute that says what they can and cannot do to your weapon. If they can do anything to it and get it to fire more than one round, according to the judge and Mr. Hahn said in this case, it doesn't matter. It's a machine gun.
Now, from what you're saying, from what the government is saying, if the gang, otherwise known as the government, if the gang, the folks with a badge who are distinguished from the mafia because they have a badge, if they are able in some way, after hours and hours of effort, to make a gun fire twice and then go thunk, that becomes a machine gun. So they could take any firearm that I have, or virtually any firearm, maybe not my revolvers, although I'm not sure about that either, but they could take any of my semi-automatics for sure. They could take any double-barreled shotgun and turn it into a machine gun. And the judge is sitting there saying, well, that's all it needs. That means you've got an unregistered fully automatic firearm, which, of course, is what our forefathers thought, believed, put into law, you ought to have, that if you didn't have that kind of firearm, the military firearm of the day, you would be fined. Now, not only are they going to fine you for having such a firearm without the government's approval, even if it can malfunction as if it were a machine gun, they're going to penalize you. What a turnaround.
Yeah, and if I could clarify it for you, you know, you said, well, you know, black powder revolver or something like that wouldn't count. I was talking with Mr. Savage, and apparently the state of Georgia has a particular law saying that a machine gun has to fire more than six rounds because in years past, a black powder revolver can be loaded in such a way that the powder gases do what's called fanning the hammer, and they actually blow the hammer back enough to cycle the cylinder, align it, and when the hammer comes forward, it will fire again. And that used to be done, so you could pull the trigger once and fire all six rounds in rapid succession.
Well, now, Buffalo Bill...
Not safe either.
Buffalo Bill better watch out, or we're going to be sending Buffalo Bill to jail because he obviously had a machine gun. That six-shooter of his was actually a hidden machine gun, and oh boy... he was a bad actor, and it's just a shame that we didn't have a Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives to put him in jail at that time.
Stay tuned for more Live Fire, the program that bears the raw truth about the battle over who controls the guns, the people or the government.
Hi, NPR and USA Radio News. I'm Pete LaValle. The shuttle Discovery is back on Earth. The huge craft landed about 11:15 a.m. Eastern Time, completing a 14-day mission to the International Space Station, in which they brought a Japanese portion of a laboratory to the space station in a major construction project. The shuttle glided home in a picture-perfect landing at Kennedy Space Center. City crews and the National Guard in Des Moines, Iowa, had built a half-mile-long wall of dirt and sandbags in an effort to prevent the Des Moines River from gushing further into the city. The river punched a 100-foot-wide hole in a levee early this morning. The Cedar River is finally falling, but it could be days before the swamped city of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, sees much relief. Officials are guessing it'll be 4 days before the river drops enough for workers to begin pumping out the water that has submerged 400 city blocks. In Japan, a 7.2 earthquake has left at least 6 people dead, 11 more missing. Rescue efforts are underway. This is IRN USA Radio News.
Running a small business is like raising a child. You nurture it, giving up your time and energy just to make sure it grows and stays healthy. You sacrifice yourself to give it every chance at success. But if you haven't incorporated yet, it could all disappear in an instant, taking with it your personal assets like your car, your life savings, even your home. Fortunately, incorporating your business is fast and easy. In fact, you can do it in just 10 minutes. And there's an easy way to find out more. Just request a free guide today and learn about the wonderful benefits of incorporation from the Company Corporation. We don't offer legal or financial advice, but we have been helping people incorporate for over 100 years. Call 1-800-495-8122. Protect your family and personal assets by forming a corporation or a limited liability company. Take your first step by requesting a free guide. Call 1-800-495-8122. 1-800-495-8122. That's 1-800-495-8122.
With an IRN USA Business News Update, I'm Greg Moore. Fueled by soaring gasoline costs, consumer prices rose during May, but core prices remained stable. That's according to the Commerce Department, which says the Consumer Price Index rose 0.6% in May after a 2% hike in April. Core prices, which don't include food and energy costs, rose only 0.2%. In a separate report, consumer confidence fell to a 28-year low in June, with less expectation that inflation will ease. Rapidly rising gasoline prices and soft labor market conditions have depressed consumer spirits, according to the Reuters University of Michigan Sentiment Index. The reading for June dropped to 56.7 from 59.8 in May. Officials at the Fed and other central banks have made it clear they're closely watching for signs the sharp run-up in food and gas prices is bleeding through to other costs. With an IRN USA Business News Update, I'm Greg Moore.
Now, more news about the threats to your liberties and your right to keep and bear arms. This is Live Fire. And here once again is your host, Executive Director of Gun Owners of America, Larry Pratt.
Talking today with David Olofsson. He lives in Berlin, Wisconsin. He has served our country for many years in the United States Army, both on active duty as well as in the reserves. He had a one of the firearms that he had, an AR-15 rifle. I am absolutely certain that many listening to this program have such a firearm. And it turned out that this firearm had some parts that were capable, because of their age, if nothing else, to fire in a malfunctioning fashion. A lot of people could have a gun old enough, been fired often enough, that eventually the parts begin to allow the gun to fire more than once with one pull of the trigger. Boom, boom, thunk. Oh, you got a machine gun, folks. That's what a judge, that's what a prosecutor, that's what the gang, that means the gang in our parlance is a reference to the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the now Justice Agency, that is on the lookout for people that might have a firearm that they don't like, and that they can get an easy conviction simply by convincing a judge and a jury that this firearm was in the possession of someone who didn't have it registered. Of course, the registry that the Bureau has is, by their own admission, and you can go to gunowners.org and find this on our foundation website, located within gunowners.org, you can find the explanation given by the head of the firearms technical branch at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, telling what apparently was a group of new BATFE agents that while we have to testify in court that any firearm that is a machine gun has to be registered, and our registry is 100% accurate, and if the gun is not in our registry, therefore it's an illegal firearm. Actually, truth be known, only our records are only about 50% accurate. And so even if David Olufsen had a machine gun, the fact that it wasn't registered doesn't mean anything at all, because the gang's registry, the government itself, is not able to keep accurate records. And of course, that doesn't. These people are shameless. They're quite willing to put a dealer, firearms dealer, out of business because he's inverted a couple of numbers in a serial number, or maybe he has allowed a customer to abbreviate what he the information on his personal information. For instance, people out in Idaho might live in Twin Falls, Idaho, which is also the county of Twin Falls. The space on the federal form, the 4473, as only a bureaucrat could love to call it, it doesn't have very much room. And so a lot of customers abbreviate. And they might abbreviate Twin Falls to be TF and the county to be TF. Oh, that's a violation. And if it's allowed to happen more than once, well, that shows a willful violation, and therefore that dealer should lose his license. Well, if that kind of standard for accuracy, quote-unquote, of record-keeping is required, then what do we do with an agency that can't even account for 50% of its own machine gun records? Should they be allowed to stay in operation? Well, apparently so. Congress doesn't seem to have any problem. But we're not even talking about a real machine gun. We're talking about a gun that, had it not been taken out of circulation, had it been allowed to keep going, as it were, this firearm could conceivably have become a real danger. The gang doesn't understand that. The gang doesn't care to understand that. They would rather put the owner of that firearm in jail because, well, he didn't have it registered with us. Dave, I'm sorry. The more I think about your case, the more upset I get with what our federal government is doing. And apparently the judge had no problem in going along with what the gang was doing.
Well, that's correct, and he went strictly off what the statute says, which was, you know, essentially, you know, any weapon that shoots more than once is a machine gun. So when you look at the statute, you know, the judge was not wrong in what he was saying.
Well, the law's an ass. I'm sorry.
Well, the laws are imperfect, that's for sure, and this is a prime example of that. Unfortunately, my defense team argued during the motion hearing, trying to either get a new trial or get an acquittal, was that case law over time has, in essence, helped clarify the statute so as to rule out anything other than willful modification done, you know, in a knowing fashion. You could say that in the statute, words like shoot and shooting are not defined, but in case law, they have been defined. As a matter of fact, I think it was even the circuit court we're in here, the Seventh Circuit, who went on to say that, you know, a machine gun will automatically continue to fire until its trigger is released or the ammunition exhausted. That was in 2002 in U.S. v. Fleshley.
In your own circuit?
In our own circuit.
So, in other words, this judge is acting as if he's his own law.
Well, I couldn't comment on that. Apparently, he thinks what he was doing is correct, and I'm not in a position to...
Well, he's an idiot.
I mean, I obviously have my own opinions on it, but all I can say is, you know, we did have that case just in 2002 that said, no, the gun needs to function and be designed properly as a machine gun if it's going to actually be one. Further, you got, you know, USB Staples, which is pretty much a mirror of my case. And it goes in there saying that, you know, something as simple as a hammer follow malfunction, like what this firearm was experiencing, does not make it a machine gun. But USB Staples dealt with possession. This was about transfer.
That is a distinction.
The judge decided that because that was possession and this was transfer, that Supreme Court decision did not apply.
That's a distinction that only an idiot judge could appreciate and could think was a real difference, because we're talking about the same dadgum gun. Whether it has been transferred or whether it has been owned, the question is, was it designed that way? Did it function that way? And what the judge in your case did was to ignore simple facts based on a distinction without a difference. That is really an outrage. This man needs to be impeached.
Well, in the case of USB Staples, just to give you an idea of how exactly like my case it is, you were even dealing with the exact same make and model gun made in the same time frame as my weapon was. I mean, we're not even dealing with different makes and models of ARs here. We're dealing with the exact same weapon, with the only difference being the serial number.
And presumably a firearm made roughly in the same period of time even.
Correct. So, you're dealing with weapons made in the mid to later 80s.
Now, it turned out that the Bureau, the gang, the federal government, knew that this firearm had been viewed, held, determined to be a malfunctioning gun when it behaved the way yours did, and they had paperwork on it, but they weren't about ready to let the judge see that and to enter that into the evidence of the case. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. The judge admitted in our last motion hearing that the federal government had considerable paperwork that it was not disclosing to the defense, and he allowed them to keep it hidden, even stealing the one piece that they gave him.
Well, let's return. We got one more segment to go, and let's return to this point, because this just shows what kind of an outrage has occurred in the case of the United States versus Olufsen. And I want to make sure that everybody has had a chance to hear what the government has done
to
these men.
Stay tuned for more Live Fire, the program that bears the raw truth about the battle over who controls the guns, the people or the government.
I'm Ryan Horsley with Red's Trading Post. Like thousands of other honest firearms dealers nationwide, Red's Trading Post is currently under attack by the ATF. Dealers are having their licenses revoked for petty violations and clerical errors. The number of FFL revocations has increased nearly 6 times in 2006. This is a backdoor attack on your Second Amendment rights. I urge you to contact your congressional delegates and sign our online petition to let them know that these attacks must stop.
President Woodrow Wilson said, "Liberty has never come from the government. The history of liberty is the history of the limitation of governmental power, not the increase of it." Woodrow Wilson has often been called a liberal, but Wilson's brand of liberalism had its focus on opportunities and personal development, not government control. The liberals today fail to see that the foundation of every nation and the structure of every culture is defined by its liberty. Hard-working Americans have been told to sit down and shut up by these so-called liberals. We have been told that we don't know how to care for ourselves, that we don't know what is best for our children. This isn't liberalism, this is socialism. So where's liberty and freedom and personal responsibility? The liberals have taken it away and replaced it with socialism. Like my daddy always told me, it's better to teach a man how to fish than to give him a fish. It's time the party of Howard Dean and Hillary Clinton come clean with their socialistic agenda.
A Conservative Moment with Nathan Tabor has been brought to you by aconservativemoment.com. To learn more, visit aconservativemoment.com or call 877-8-ACT-NOW.
I'm Ryan Horsley with Red's Trading Post. Like thousands of other honest firearms dealers nationwide, Red's Trading Post is currently under attack by the ATF. Dealers are having their licenses revoked for petty violations and clerical errors. The ATF Reform Act was passed by Congress, but held up by Senator Feinstein. This is another backdoor attack on your Second Amendment rights. I urge you to contact your congressional delegates and sign our online petition to let them know that these kinds of attacks must stop.
Now, more news about the threats to your liberties and your right to keep and bear arms. This is Live Fire. And here once again is your host, Executive Director of Gun Owners of America, Larry Pratt.
If you've tuned in late to the show and you want to hear the entire broadcast, it will be available at gunowners.org, the website of Gun Owners of America. Gunowners.org is the place you can go. Within about 48 hours, it'll be archived there under the tab Live Fire, which is, of course, the name of this show. We're talking with David Olufsen. He is a man who has served our country for years and years in the United States Army, active duty and reserves, lives in Berlin, Wisconsin. And the government has found that even though they knew that he had a malfunctioning gun, it didn't matter a whit. And even though the same, this is something I hadn't realized, the same circuit had dealt with the same problem of a malfunctioning gun and distinguishing it from a gun that was designed to fire fully automatically, that when you pull the trigger, it would go boom, 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 until you either let off the trigger or it ran out of ammunition. Or perhaps you had a selector switch that would limit your burst to perhaps three rounds. But this gun was doing it because it was getting ready to hurt somebody. It was malfunctioning. This was a boo-boo. And no. That's a machine gun, says the judge in United States versus Olufsen. And they knew all of this stuff. David, I can't imagine that a judge would do something like that, knowing that there were so many precedents which in our system of justice are supposed to govern what a judge does.
Well, that's one of the reasons we're so confident that, you know, it will get resolved at a higher level. I mean, there's
hopefully before they put you in the pokey.
I am definitely hoping. Yeah. It's not going to be a whole lot of fun if I got to wait anywhere from, you know, 3 to 12 months to clear this particular problem up behind bars.
This involves a judge who apparently has a real attitude and picked up on things that he didn't like about you because you live in a state which is one of two that doesn't allow, quote unquote, Americans to do what they should be able to do anyway, regardless of what the law is, namely to carry a firearm. And in your case, you weren't even carrying it concealed. You were using the protection, you thought, silly boy, of the law of the state of Wisconsin, which makes it pretty clear that people can walk around with a pistola on their hip, and yet the local or the state, I'm not sure which, cops had brought charges against you, not once or twice, but several occasions, I gather, because you were walking around legally with that gun on your hip, and it caused them to wet their pants, so they brought charges against you. And if I'm not mistaken, every single time they were found wrong, and you were acquitted, their charges were dismissed, whatever the case, because you were keeping the law, not the cops. Do I have that right?
Yeah, every time in, you know, a little over the past decade, it's pretty much SOP in Wisconsin. In a lot of areas, especially, or I should say definitely in the larger cities, but even in the smaller towns, if
like
you have
early.
A gun on your side, you know, even if it's completely legal and the carry is legal, their SOP is a, you know, arrest you, take you in, and if anything, since they can't charge you with carrying a weapon, they will typically, as I had them try to do to me in the past, will try to fabricate a charge of carrying concealed, or they will charge you with disorderly conduct, their viewpoint being, if somebody called us, it's disorderly because they didn't like it.
You were disturbing the peace.
Yes. The point I make out to them is like, well, if disturbing the peace is any time somebody doesn't like what another is doing, will you arrest yourself? Because I don't like what you're doing. You know, I don't like the way you wear your hair. You know, where do we draw the line?
Or I don't like the fact that you're breaking the law by arresting me for doing what's legally allowed.
Yeah, so I take them to court. The court invariably throws the charges out. And when it came time for sentencing, this judge was outraged. And he made it very clear that he didn't care if it was legal to carry openly in the state of Wisconsin. In his view, any person that dares to carry a firearm in public is endangering public safety.
And the fact that you had been charged was enough as if you had been convicted. And so having been charged, he used as a reason for enhancing the sentence that he was about to impose. Incredible!
Well, in some of the arguments the government was making even before sentencing, they wanted to follow, I think we have a case out in Wyoming that was similar in what they wanted to do here. I think it was U.S. versus Serafin, where the government is currently taking the position when it comes to sentence enhancements that if you are a gun owner, you should get additional time because you would not have committed any particular crime without having or owning a gun. Owning that gun makes you more likely to commit a crime. You know, in this case, we did manage to get that pulled off the books, but, you know, they were looking for something around, you know, like a two-year increase just for being a gun owner. And I believe they were looking for another two-and-a-half-year increase, claiming I was a gun trafficker. Their reasoning for that being I have periodicals like Shotgun News and Gun List around here, along with some electronic communications from the company's website on my computer, showing, you know, price lists of gun parts and guns and whatnot.
I hope
in their viewpoint, owning that or having those periodicals and those lists is all they need to prove that you are trafficking in weapons.
And, of course, trafficking in weapons is a really bad thing to do. And here, you know, we're not talking about a case. You mentioned that the precedent for part of this insanity comes from the state of Wyoming. Listen to this, folks. We're not talking about Brooklyn. We're not talking about San Francisco. We're talking about a judge in Wisconsin and using a case in Wyoming, which is not exactly where the gun bedwetters live, and yet this is the kind of quote-unquote judicial decision that is being used by this judge in David Olofsson's case. So it doesn't matter where you live, you can't rely on the fact that everybody you know is sane around you in your neighborhood, because you may have a judge that is absolutely flat out on the moon, completely insane and detached from reality, and hates guns just because somebody in school told him that guns are bad. And this is the attitude that we are facing. This is what has so endangered the family of David Olofsson, because a judge, and actually we know what the government believes, because in the Milwaukee Journal, these liars told the journalist, who was so lazy that he wouldn't even investigate the matter, that David Olofsson had been convicted of firearms charges. And that is simply not true. But we know what is in the mind of these officials because we have it in the Milwaukee Journal, and apparently this newspaper just takes whatever the government gives them And that must be the truth because the government told me. David, I'm just amazed. I am outraged that this passes for journalism. Please, folks, whatever you see in the newspapers, even if you see Larry Pratt as a really great guy and he loves his family, don't believe it. Check it out. This is incredible. I saw this article in the Milwaukee Journal, and what is going on?
That's one of the particulars. When you get down to the sentencing phase of a criminal prosecution like this, the way the system works, they can introduce pretty much any opinion that they want. There's no requirement. It's not like a trial. They don't have to prove what they're saying is true. All they have to do is make the allegation, and the judge is allowed to take that allegation at face value, unless at that point in time the defense is ready to absolutely refute it. In cases like this, we didn't even get on paper what the government was trying to claim until we were walking up to the courtroom for the motion hearings.
So you had about 5 minutes warning that this was coming.
Yeah, not even in my case. They did that prior in this trial, too. I mean, when they decided to try and hide everything that we had asked for in our discovery motions, you know, after months of going back and forth, telling us, we're working on it, we're going to get it to you, they wait until, you know, 5 minutes before the actual trial starts to tell the judge, we're sorry, Your Honor, but, you know, we believe everything Mr. Olson is asking for is tax information, so we're not going to disclose any information to the defense team.
Now, when they say tax information, what they're implying is that, oh, this is somebody's tax records, and we respect the privacy of people in this country, and therefore we can't release that information because that would violate somebody's privacy.
In this case, there was only one piece that would have fallen under Section 6103 of Title 26, that being a Form 4 from an individual who had an AR-15 with, I believe it was six M16 components in it, to include a bolt carrier, which this one did not have, and that weapon was actually removed off the NFTR registry by the ATF, claiming it was not a machine gun.
That's ruling, really key to your case. Not only did your firearm malfunction, but had it had the kind of components that would have conceivably allowed it to function fully automatically, the gang had removed it from the firearms registry that would have had it on the list of machine guns in the country. Is that not what you just said?
Yes, and there's other cases similar to that. I mean, U.S. the Aguilar Espinoza says that, you know, a malfunctioning gun is not a machine gun. We have another case.
Now, the judge knew about that case, and he said, well, that's not going to govern in this court. David Olson, our prayers are with you, and hopefully your appeal is going to be heard in a timely fashion. This is an outrage. Folks, watch your backs. The government is not here to help you. That is the sad fact of the matter. Well, we're going to follow up on this, and we're going to keep our eye on it.
Our rights to keep and bear arms have never been under as much attack, and gun owners of